Okay, Alexander, we've got to talk about Putin and his remarks with regard to NATO, with regard to perhaps finding a deal with NATO, a legal agreement, which is an interesting it was an interesting way for Putin to approach this. I think the first time that we've actually heard Putin talk about legal guarantees with regards to NATO expansion. We also had the first time that Lavrov and Blinken actually met and shook hands, which was interesting. They've been bumping elbows in the past, but now they've shaken hands and they've met as well. I believe in Stockholm, they had a meeting. What's going on here? What do we have going on? I find it very interesting that Putin is saying, look, let's get some legal guarantees and we don't have to worry about anything going on with Ukraine. All of this is around Ukraine, of course, and NATO expansion, but I'm hearing stories that missiles are going to start being moved all over Europe as well, NATO missiles and US missiles as well, medium range missiles.
Oh yeah,
So I mean
absolutely. That
De-escalation, escalation. Which way are we moving? Or maybe a little of both.
right. Well, I'm going to say straight away, I think this is one of the most momentous speeches potentially that has been made by any Russian leader since the end of the Cold War. Now, it's not been widely reported in the Western media. In fact, in Britain, it's not been reported at all, which is practically extraordinary. I mean, you won't find headlines about this, but this is the first time, to my knowledge, that the Russians have come out and they've said, this is our policy, we're now making demands, and we're actually making demands of the West. Now, up to now, up to this point, ever since the Cold War ended, indeed since before the Cold War ended, the Russians have responded. They've been responding to steps, things that the Americans have done. They've acted, if you like, on the defense. Now they're moving forward. They're going on the offense. They say, this is what we want the Americans, the NATO powers, to agree to. And what they're saying is NATO expansion must end. There must be no further NATO expansion. Western military forces, NATO military forces must be pulled away from Russia's borders. And we want an all-encompassing treaty, a treaty which in effect accepts that, we have our red lines and that NATO expansion must stop, and that also will result in a reduction in military forces in close NATO military forces close to Russia's borders. And what it shows to my mind is that at this moment in time, despite all of these Western moves, the fact that missiles have been moved in various places and things of that kind, the Russians are becoming increasingly confident. They feel that things are beginning to move in their favor, and therefore they're able to make these sort of demands. Now, it's important to stress these are demands which NATO will not agree to at this time. No way. Stoltenberg, Jens Stoltenberg, who's NATO's profoundly neocon Secretary General. I mean, he went almost berserk when he heard about what Putin said. He said that Russia has no veto, Russia has no say, Russia has no right to a sphere of influence. He was talking in the most, I mean, extraordinary words. I mean, talking about a country which is a military and nuclear superpower, that they have no right to any views, opinions, say about matters which impact on their own security. An incredibly arrogant and indeed utopian phrase. So NATO will not agree to this at the moment, but the Russians clearly feel that the tide of events is going in their favour, and now they've set out their stall. They said, this is what we want. We're confident that things are moving in our direction. In time, we expect you to agree to what we want because it's in your interests to. Unless you agree to that, there will be no peace in Europe. So that's where we've got to. It's a potentially a momentous event. I say potentially because, of course, there's always a chance that there will be a political crisis in Moscow or an economic crisis there, or something could go wrong, or a new Russian leader might take things in a different direction. I don't personally think any of those things are going to happen. I think that from now on, the situation is going to continue as we've seen, with the Russians making their demands, insisting that these demands be met, and gradually, piece by piece, we will see that as the balance shifts, the Western powers will presumably either have to agree to what the Russians are insisting, because they can't afford indefinite tension in Europe, or alternatively, doing what some of the neocons will increasingly be demanding, go for broke, start perhaps a war in Ukraine, try to reverse this trend that we are seeing by winning a sort of Grand Slam battle in Europe. So we're at a tipping point. We are at a moment when things could go either way, and we will see which way they do.
Okay, so either we will get peace, we'll get a deal, and we'll get some sort of stability. I won't say peace, we'll get stability, at least for the medium term, short term, medium term, long term, you don't know. Or option number two, what's behind door number two, is that maybe this was Putin's way of presenting a pause in the buildup until both sides are ready, more prepared for an eventual conflict, i.e. knowing, look, we're heading towards a conflict. There's no way to resolve it. So here's what I'm offering. Let's strike some sort of deal. We know that the deal's going to break down anyway. And, it buys us some more time. Maybe something akin to the events of, I don't know, maybe like World War II or something like that. Strike a deal, buy a couple of years. But we know the direction of things.
Yes.
Or number three, this was just a last-ditch effort to say, let's make a deal. I know they're not going to accept it, but at least, on paper, we go down in history as the side that says, look, let's figure this out in a legal framework. We're going to head towards conflict, but at least no one can fault us for not trying.
Well, I think that's possible scenarios. My impression was actually that he was actually pretty confident, and he was coming to this from a fairly confident point of view. As I said, I think he feels that the balance of forces are starting to shift increasingly in his and in Russia's favour. His economy is now becoming increasingly sanctions proof. His military power, Russia's military power, is growing all the time, growing faster than NATO's is, by the way. And remember, NATO, the United States, it has also to worry now about China, which is a major military threat too. And also, of course, from Putin's point of view, he's got the Chinese at his back. So he feels increasingly confident. Things are moving in his favour. He's setting out his long-term policy. He wants stability in Europe, as he rightly said. He's not looking for friendship. I mean, that's all no longer even, any kind of idea. He's not looking to integrate Russia into European or Western institutions anymore. But he's looking for something very like the kind of deal that was done in the 1960s between the Soviets and the United States, which put the Cold War on ice. The problem is that the neocons are not prepared for this deal. And the danger is that if they sense that Putin is right and that the balance is shifting increasingly in Russia's favour, then in order to prevent this deal from ever materialising, from crystallising, they might say to themselves, well, let's start a war now, and start a war in Ukraine, because it would have to be logically in Ukraine, and try to reverse the trend of events. And I think that's a real danger. I think when you listen to the language of people like Stoltenberg, you get the sense that that's exactly how they would prefer to go. And I think that's probably where we are. So it seems to me that we are either in a pre-conflict situation, and when I say pre-conflict situation, a pre-conflict situation over the next few months or years, or we are at the beginning of a process like the one that began in the 1960s, which will end in some kind of stabilization of the situation in Europe on Russian terms, with perhaps some kind of easing of tensions afterwards. In other words, a kind of geopolitical ceasefire. But that's where we are. So the way forward from this point is either we get to the kind of situation which existed in the middle Cold War, where there was an acceptance by both sides that the world, Europe, was divided into essential blocks, spheres of influence, or we get into a situation where the neocons decide that they're going to test the situation with Russia. They start a war because they sense that the balance of forces is moving against them. They can't psychologically accept the possibility that there's any limit to American power. And in that case, we're going to see a conflict, probably in Ukraine. In fact, it would definitely be in Ukraine. And at that point, it would end in a debacle, because, as we've discussed many times, a war in Ukraine would end in a disaster for the West.
Okay, so what happens to Ukraine in this the situation? Because essentially what you're saying is that if it turns out in the way that, you know, you're describing, say it does take this this scenario, that essentially means that the US is done with Ukraine, NATO is done with Ukraine, Europe is done with Ukraine, EU. That means the whole Maidan revolution, the Maidan dream, right? This whole thing, this whole fiction, which was a fiction. This whole thing ends. There's no entering the European Union. There's no entering NATO. There's no euros being dropped from a helicopter to the masses and everyone becoming rich and everyone driving a Mercedes. You know, everything that was sold during the whole Maidan revolution, the whole integration into Europe and the EU, the United States opening up 10 Microsoft offices and 10 Google offices in Ukraine, and just being this incredible, prosperous country that the Maidan revolution was selling, which was complete bunk. But anyway, all of that is gone. It's wiped away. Wiped away.
Absolutely.
That's it. And what does this mean for Ukraine, especially the forces that were driving the Maidan, i.e. the forces in the West that are pretty dangerous forces?
Absolutely. Now, I think that this is where Ukraine really needs to start thinking about its options. And it's going to be very, very difficult to do, because if this agreement that Putin wants is eventually secured, and, you know, he's prepared to wait, Russia is prepared to take time, they're confident that they will get it one day, then obviously Ukraine cannot join NATO, it cannot join the EU. Sooner or later, it will be pulled back into Russia's gravitational orbit. And of course, the whole Maidan experiment will have been a complete failure. The alternative is that things stay as they are. And in the meantime, it's important to say that Ukraine is already in a trap, because it can't join NATO, it can't join the EU, whilst the situation in eastern Ukraine remains unresolved, because, of course, NATO and the EU will not want to bring into their fold a country which is already in a state of war and which they would then have to defend. So it's in a kind of a trap. Its economy is bleeding away. Its economic situation is becoming increasingly dire. The political situation is becoming unstable. And I did a program for my own channel in which I discussed reporting done on the front lines by the London Times. They toured Ukrainian army positions on the Donbass conflict line. And they found a Ukrainian army that's also gradually demoralizing, getting more demoralized, ebbing away, bogged down in trench warfare, unable to advance, unable to retreat. So it seems to me that in this kind of situation, they've got to make a decision. Either they put aside this fantasy that you've said, I mean, this idea of integrating with the West, start to do deals with the Russians. I mean, that's realistically what they should do. It would stabilize the situation in Ukraine if they did that. Or alternatively, and this is what those hardliners that you mentioned are far more likely to do, they decide to go for broke. They launch a war in eastern Ukraine because their hope is that if there is a war, at least that might rally to some extent Western support to their side. And if it doesn't, well, at that point, if they fail, They fail gloriously, as they see it. They're defeated by overwhelming forces. Psychologically, sometimes it's easier to go down fighting, or what you think is going down fighting, than to accept that, you know, to accept defeat, in effect, give up on your dream and recognize that this is the end. Now, there is another option, and perhaps this is in some ways the one that might eventually work out, which is that Western Ukraine, the region in the far west, which is the most anti-Russian, the most hostile to Russia, the area that used to be called Galicia, which is part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, that breaks away from the rest of Ukraine, forms an entirely independent state, and the rest of Ukraine goes back into the Russian system. If the Russians would accept that, I think the West is very far from the point of even contemplating that possibility. But who knows, maybe that will be the way forward in the end.
Okay, so just to wrap it up, just so we all understand the predicament that that we're in, which is really just, God, it's incredible, the problem that we have here. So on the one hand, you have the neocons who are not going to accept Putin's deal. I mean, they're going to be kicking and screaming, and they're going to want a conflict no matter what. They're not going to accept this. It's going to be no way, no chance. Let's go for broke. On the flip side, you're going to have these crazy neo-NAZI forces. Everyone knows that these forces are the real deal. These aren't the fictitious, you know, NAZIs in the United States. This is the real deal. These guys in the West are going to be kicking and screaming, saying, hell no, we are not going to be folded into the Russian sphere again, kicking and screaming. They're going to want to go for broke as well. I mean, Zelensky is toast. Everyone is in Kiev is probably going to be like, crap, how do we hold these guys back in the West? How do you come to a solution there? Because either way, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be stoking up crazy radical forces that are going to want to go for broke. If you go one direction, you have the neocons. If you go the other directions, you have the neo-NAZIs. I mean, you can't really win, can you? And if you go with your with the other solution, which is real quick, you know, breaking off the West, no one wants the West. No one wants them. Because everyone in Europe also knows that these guys in the West, we don't want these forces around us. These guys are crazy. And then you also have, real quick, the fact that Hungary has territorial claims to the West. Poland has territorial claims to the West. Romania has territorial claims to the West. I mean, this is nuts.
Well, this is exactly where they've got themselves into. They got themselves into a position from which there is no good outcome. Now, what they do is difficult to say. I mean, I personally am convinced that sooner or later there's going to be some kind of a war in Ukraine. I mean, I can't see these people finding any other solution to it. I think that sooner or later, if they sense that Western support is weakening, and there will be an attack by the Ukraine by these people in against Eastern Ukraine, that will mean a rapid military defeat, the breakup of Ukraine, a crisis for the West, obviously. But then, of course, Putin will be in a position, in effect, to impose that which he has just demanded by treaty. He won't need a treaty anymore because he's going to be in a position where he's already achieved what he wanted. So, I mean, that seems to me, to be straightforward about it, the most plausible outcome. I don't think the Ukrainians, these people, will accept a situation where they're going to be grounded down. But if that happens, if there is a military defeat like that, then I don't think that, as you correctly say, anybody wants Western Ukraine. I suspect what will happen, realistically, is that the Russians will absorb most of Ukraine. They'll cut off Western Ukraine. And many of those people in Western Ukraine will leave. They'll go to Canada, they'll go to Europe, they'll go to all sorts of places. And this place will be left, you know, a sad remnant in the middle of Europe. Now, whether they want to put themselves in that situation, whether they can be realistic about that, whether they can start making realistic choices, well, that we'll just have to see.
Real quick, under international law, or I mean, could realistically Poland, if they would want, or Hungary or Romania, I mean, would they say, yeah, we'll take our historic pieces of this territory that we have historical claim on, and each one will present their case. Can they absorb it? And would that be recognized by international law or the EU? I mean, I'm just throwing out scenarios. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen.
I'm just throwing out scenarios.
You know, each of these countries does have some sort of ethnic and historical
claim
case that they can make. Yeah.
I mean, to be straightforward about it, under international law, in theory, that shouldn't happen. But of course, the reality is that if there were that kind of a crisis and countries like Poland, Romania, Hungary took the kind of steps that you did, and if there was an agreement, and an agreement with Russians, say, for example, backed by other countries, China, perhaps, India, who knows, then, of course, international law can change. I mean, we can have new boundaries, and those boundaries, if they are recognised by enough countries, they become the new boundaries, and they're the ones that international law safeguards. It's a very, very advanced scenario. I'm not saying we're going to be there. I mean, a kind of partition of Ukraine, there would be huge opposition to it. And, you know, it's still a long way. We're still a long way off from that point. But, you know, who knows? It's certainly a possibility. The underlying point is that Ukraine's position does not look good. The only kind of response the West can take in the event of a military crisis in Ukraine is economic sanctions, financial sanctions. It's now been essentially and openly admitted. There is no other way forward. So given that that is so, I can't really see any other way for Ukraine rationally but to negotiate. And if Ukraine won't negotiate, then we could very well find ourselves in exactly the kind of scenarios that you've just been outlining.
Very, very quickly, the other possible solution would be for the president of Ukraine, in this case, Zelensky, or the next guy that comes around, to just say, we're going to abandon NATO and the EU. We, as Ukraine, are abandoning NATO, this NATO and the EU dream. We'll still be friendly with the EU, and we'll be friendly with NATO, and we'll trade and all of these things, and that's fine, but we're going to just go back to where we were, being part of this, just where we were before the entire 2013 nonsense. And they try internally to deal with these, you know, radical forces in the West, if that's possible.
Well, that's the optimal outcome. Is it going to happen? I can't see Zelensky doing it. Perhaps one day some other Ukrainian leader will do it. The Russians have said they're prepared to wait until such a leader appears. But at the moment, there's no sign of one. The only person who might look as if he could do it is Viktor Medvedchuk, who is the leader of the biggest opposition party in Ukraine. But he's under house arrest, and he's, of course, facing treason charges. So, I mean, it's not a possibility one can completely exclude. In fact, it's the optimal one. It's the wise one. It's the rational one. Maybe, you know, Ukrainian oligarchs, seeing the mess they're in, maybe they will take it. But for the moment, it doesn't look as if they're in a position to do it.
All right. We'll leave it there. TheDuran.locals.com, everybody. Super U, Rumble, BitChute, and Odyssey. You'll find the videos there. And go to the Duran shop. Use the code GOODDAY and get 10% off all merchandise. Take care.